Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
0141-951-1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Celtic and Aberdeen faced disciplinary action from the footballing authorities after recent coronavirus breaches. Bolly Bolingolly and the Aberdeen 8 are also in line to face individual punishments, and Hearts hit out at the decision to stop them training. I'm Gordon Duncan. Joining me in the studio, Daryl Broadfoot and Hugh Keevans.
Bolingolly and the Aberdeen 8 deserve all that's coming their way. By their actions, they made a mockery of the NHS workers who have been battling for the last 6 months to help contain a deadly virus. And Aberdeen are right to fine the 8 players, as they have done today, and give the money to the NHS. That's what Celtic should do with Bolingolly as well. But I think the clubs are being harshly treated if they're dealt with too severely. What are they supposed to do after rigidly adhering to the COVID-19 protocols? Keep the players under house arrest?
I'll make it very, very simple. What odds on us getting to football anytime soon in the next 2 hours?
None at all.
I was going to say, Hugh Keevans, this might be a first for me. I've been here a few years now, and on a Friday night, I'm not sure the three headlines have ever been read out without any mention of the games that are going to follow this weekend. So we won't neglect them completely.
No.
But we have to read the room. I think it's fairly obvious what's on people's minds. But once we get that out the way, it's going to be good to look forward to some actual football on the pitch.
For a lot of people, we have ceased to be about football. The whole business is a legal matter now. And I do understand we live in extraordinary times. I do understand that Bolingolly and the Aberdeen 8 were bang out of order. They should be dealt with. But we're moving into dangerous waters. These clubs are paying a fortune. The likes of Aberdeen and Celtic are paying a fortune to have players properly tested. They have their biosecure bubbles. They are doing everything within their power. The actions of the 9 players are inexplicable. But how are the clubs supposed to legislate for somebody like Bolingolly who disappears to Malaga for 24 hours?
Listen, sadly for the clubs, there is no remedy or rule that would absolutely make sure that common sense is applied by employees who become civilians when they leave that training ground.
Well, don't worry, I'm sure we'll test a few of those theories over the next couple of hours. 0141 951 1025. And if you would like to talk about what's going to happen on the field this weekend, we would more than welcome that as well. Big games to look forward to, so why not get in touch with your thoughts on that. And of course, today's breaking news, 0141 951 1025, and Twitter at ClydeSSB. Let's try and sort of break it down relatively simply. So Bolly Bolingolly plus the Aberdeen 8, as they've now become known, the worst boy band name in history, they've been charged under basically the Scottish FA's existing disciplinary code. You've all heard this before. Compliance officer, notice of complaint, that type of thing. So Rule 71, basically bringing the game into disrepute. Rule 24, again, basically not complying with the articles, laws of the game, the rules, procedures, regulations, bylaws and decisions of the Scottish FA. Now, what that could mean for them, well, suspensions, perhaps 2 matches, I think, is the minimum. I'm glad Daryl's here because he can correct me on all of this stuff, rising perhaps to more matches. What is slightly different this time, though, is it's the SPFL, not the Scottish FA, the SPFL that's opened separate disciplinary proceedings against the clubs, against Aberdeen and Celtic, for alleged breaches of its COVID rules. Have I said anything?
I'll just leave now.
Job
well done.
We're going to need you between now and 8 o'clock.
You were right. The SPFL rules came in. They are COVID specific rules, requirements of testing and regulation. And so alleged breaches become part of the SPFL's new COVID specific regulation. Scottish FA has already had, as you said, the judicial panel protocol that looks after player misconduct, whether on or off the field.
See, listen, you think we do this by accident. Daryl's here because he knows this stuff. And by the way, that doesn't mean you have to agree with him. You can disagree with him until your heart's content. But
I can disagree with him as well. But
I mean, it's clearly an open and shut case where Ballingolly and the Aberdeen players are concerned. They have not a leg to stand on, and therefore, whatever comes their way, they will deserve that punishment. But I think with the clubs, now, it's acknowledged that Scottish football has tried very, very hard, and the clubs are spending a lot of money protecting public health and their own players and staff. I repeat, if Ballingolly, who's told by Neil Lennon, as every other Celtic player was told by Neil Lennon, do not leave Glasgow on your day off. If he then, dressed in the finest designer gear available to man and, you know, making no attempt to make himself conspicuous, flies off to Malaga and comes back within 24 hours. I mean, how is Neil Lennon or anyone else at Celtic supposed to legislate for that?
Would you welcome, though, a spotlight being put there to find out if Aberdeen and Celtic have done everything? And by the way, I have no reason to believe that they haven't, but I suspect that you don't know for sure either.
Well, yeah. By all means, let's have transparency. But these clubs, within the confines of their grounds and their training facilities, are doing everything in their power to conform to the COVID-19 protocols.
Daryl, you mentioned this being COVID-specific, and it is something new for us to get our head around, really, because when we have these types of debates in Scottish football, we don't tend to have clubs being punished for the actions of individuals, whether that be individual players or indeed individual fans, as we've seen in the past. That doesn't tend to end in punishment towards clubs. But this is new.
But it's important to separate the two. So the Scottish FA disciplinary charges are specific to players, and the SPFL's one's specific to the clubs. And it's not because of what the players did, it's breaches of that COVID-19 protocol, the undertaking of the requirements and testing regulations. So I don't want to prejudge it, but it's not a double jeopardy. It's not the players have done it, and so we'll punish you for what the players have done, though they are separate investigations and disciplinary procedures on what the players did within the Scottish FA rules and what steps the clubs took to mitigate or to ensure that the protocols were adhered to.
Okay, so by the fact that we're in this position today, does that mean there's already a suggestion that Aberdeen and Celtic haven't fulfilled those protocols, or is this about finding out?
Not necessarily. What you have now are COVID-specific rules, and when you have 8 Aberdeen players and 1 Celtic player allegedly breach the players' rules, it's natural that you then have to look at what the clubs have done. So it's without prejudice, but if you have a newly created rule, you have to then measure that rule against what you see.
Daryl, let me ask you, if the clubs are responsible for being biosecure at the Cormac Centre for Aberdeen, Lennox Town for Celtic, Pittodrie and Celtic Park, to what extent are they responsible for players who are walking down Union Street or Argyle Street?
And this is the beauty of these hearings. You will have aggravating factors and mitigating factors, and I've got no doubt that the clubs will use the heavy mitigation on this is what we've done, these are the rules that we've adhered to get football back on. And you're right, it's the point at which an employee, let's pretend it's not football, an employee leaves his or her place of work and becomes a civilian. That's the most galling part of what's happened in the Aberdeen situation. It's not within the training ground. It's as civilians, they elected to go to a bar in breach of the government guidelines. And just a bit of a backstory, the JRG was set up initially to guide and support and steer clubs to compliance. It wasn't a punishment, or it wasn't a kind of disciplinary wing. It was there to help clubs through this ridiculously unseen time where things were happening fast. The need to get football back on, but the need for rules to be put together to ensure clubs can comply, testing protocols, for example. Once First Minister says football has a yellow card, once Jason Leach, the National Clinical Director, says that his confidence in the protocols and adherence by clubs and players is no longer there, that's a change. That's a watershed moment for football. And that's why these alleged breaches have to be taken seriously, because government need to see that Scottish football is serious about making sure that before they open up to championship and grassroots adult football, that players in particular understand there can be no dubiety about what the clubs are telling them.
There's a lot to pick through here. 0141 951 1025. We've got Hearts part in all this as well. Lots to get to. So let's speak to Jerry. He was first through in Kilwinning. How's it going, Jerry?
Hi Dan. Yeah, I'm okay, thanks. I was on the show Saturday night, and I said at the time I thought that, you know, I was very harsh with regards to the players who broke the rules, the Aberdeen players. I thought they should be sacked. Obviously, that was before ball and goalie. I want to take that back because I don't want anyone to lose their jobs. And I agree that from now on there should be some serious issues or serious consequences for the players. But these rules should have been put in place beforehand. That's the major issue. Why did the SPFL, the SFA not have these protocols in place before the season began? It didn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that maybe just one footballer at the very least would break the lockdown protocols. And so it happened. On a separate issue, there are a lot of Rangers
fans... Jerry, just on that point, Jerry, the protocols have been in place long before the season started.
Mm. No, I think maybe Jerry's talking about the fact that we've now got this prospect of punishment, you know, whether it be a three-game ban, a five-game ban. I'm throwing those figures out there. That now is staring players in the face. Has that always been there? Why is that not...
Yeah,
come...
Scottish FA rules are...
So that was always a possibility.
Yeah. And the protocols, to be specific about it, the protocols on returning to training and returning to playing have been put in place long before the Premier. Mm. In fact, they were a condition of Scottish football starting again.
Where's the breakdown here? And I appreciate that we are getting quite vague. So if you're the Aberdeen players, I assume they are not sitting in that pub saying, oh, we could face a six-game ban for this, but we probably won't. So, you know, where's the breakdown there? Was it clear enough to everyone involved?
In a pub? Well, let's.
Well, that's what I was going to say. That's a different issue, isn't it? That's your civilian problem. None of us can do that.
But it's a good point. And the phrase "when in a biosecure bubble," that doesn't give you immunity to come out of your football bubble, which is protected by the testing regime. So the twice weekly testing, that is, and the stadium configuration and the training ground configuration, that's your biosecure bubble. That's a phrase that shows the testing and the access and egress and all the things, the showerhead numbers, make that football environment secure. It is not a magic pill that allows you to go and say, I'm biosecure, and go into what looked like the busiest pub in Aberdeen and think, I'm all right, I'm immune from the dozens of people who are clamouring in here.
I don't think anyone disputes that. Your point, Gordon, I think, is that the players are saying, what? An 8-game ban, if that's what happens.
By the way, I've no idea what the punishment would be, and we shouldn't really prejudge it. I was just kind of thrown out there as an example.
Whatever the punishment.
You made clear, does it not, though, Gordon? Actually, needs to be told.
Jerry, the first Jerry, as a civilian, the First Minister comes on television every day, alongside the National Clinical Director or whomever is most relevant that day. The football authorities send almost a daily update. There's web hubs for the grassroots game and for the professional game and the teams to make sure that their players are educated. Jason Leach went back on a Zoom call last week.
If a player goes out to a pub, let's just say, for example, Odson Edward goes to a pub, are Celtic going to get deducted 3 points?
There's no mention of points deduction at all. It will not come to points deduction. The players will be dealt with individually under the SFA code, bringing the game into disrepute effectively. The SPFL will rightly, in the interest of transparency, investigate whether Aberdeen and Celtic did all in their power within the COVID-19 protocols. But there's absolutely no suggestion of points being deducted.
Would you go along with that, Daryl? That's the bit that gets fans really going, it seems. If our phone lines or our Twitter feeds are anything to go by, every other response is, well, just they forfeit the points for the games that they can't play.
Listen, it's an interesting point. Forfeiture. You forfeit a game if you cannot fulfil your fixtures. Now, the recent postponements were not because the clubs could not fulfil their fixtures. They were not allowed to fulfil their fixtures because of, well, the alleged breaches, but also an outbreak in Aberdeen. And the fact that Ballingolly decided to go to a quarantine country, not tell anybody, and go among his teammates. So forfeiture is the failure to fulfil your fixtures. That's not the case with these ones. It's probably worth spending a couple of minutes looking at the context of this. Today, First Minister's saying that the R rate could be above one, the point at which it gets tricky for the country. You've got five countries added to the quarantine list, tens of thousands of people told you've got 30 hours to get back or you're isolating for 14 days. We've had an update yesterday that is the equivalent of missing training for a week before a season starts on October the 6th. Anecdotally, and this is a serious point, I live north of Glasgow, drove down to my local restaurant yesterday, and on the way down, I saw a group of youth footballers on a public park with one coach breaching the guidelines. On the way back up, there's an 11-a-side pitch full of adults playing football, 11-a-side, half of them wearing bibs. People are not taking it seriously. And once you open up Pandora's box, it's difficult to put it back in. That's why football's had to take it seriously, because people are not taking it seriously enough and breaching the rules on a regular basis.
And in our extremely simple world here, those who are calling for points to be forfeited, when it happens to their club, they will scream the place down if there's any suggestion of points being forfeited.
Well, let's bring in Liam, who's a Celtic fan in Coatbridge. What do you make of it, Liam?
Hiya. I feel like whatever decision is made, it's the right decision, whether it's points deduction or a huge fine. But I think also everybody's having a go at Ball and Golly, but why is nobody challenging Neil Lennon? Because if Neil Lennon doesn't give the 2 days off, he doesn't go to Spain.
Hold on a second, Liam. You are distorting this whole topic. How can Neil Lennon do anything other than address the players as he did do and say, listen, do not leave Glasgow. Day off, do not leave Glasgow. So how can Neil Lennon be in any way guilty here?
Footballers are employees. They're not prisoners. You can't electronically tag footballers to make sure. I mean, they might have in the olden days been able to use the phones, and Sir Alex Ferguson knew where everybody was, but you can't tag footballers to make sure that you know where their every movement is 24 hours a day.
I have been listening to this programme all week, and I've heard people come on and say that the passports should be confiscated and held by the club. I've heard people say that on their day off, players should be required to email the club to explain where they are. Liam, they are human beings. They have rights like you and me, and that stuff does not happen.
I mean, Liam, I'm about to contradict myself here, because I feel like we draw on mad analogies on this show too often, but I'll do it anyway. Wherever you work, Liam, if you have the day off and you then go and do something you shouldn't on the day off, it's not your boss's fault for giving you the day off, is it?
I'm not saying it's Neil Lennon's fault, but if he doesn't give them the 2 days off after the first game back, it doesn't happen.
You're telling me that no manager should ever give players the day off?
I'm not saying that, but after the first game back, what was the reason for them having the 2 days off?
Listen,
if you don't give them, you don't give them the 2 days off, it doesn't go to Spain.
It's an interesting point. Players have rights, you know, through PFA. Players are entitled to days off just as you and I have.
Yeah. Now, I think Liam's maybe, though, sort of bringing in the football element as to why did they need the days off anyway. Now, they're clearly, the link maybe isn't as strong there as Liam thinks it is, but that's just a footballing decision for Neil Lennon. It's neither here nor there, really. Why?
Honestly, we're moving into Alice in Wonderland territory now. You know, I mean, why did he give them a day off? You know, the player has been guilty of the most grotesque misbehaviour in the current climate, to go to a country where he should have come back and quarantined himself for a fortnight, not tell him. He was arrogant. He was deceitful. But what's Neil Lennon and giving the players a day off got to do with this?
Liam, thanks for getting in touch. If you're off tomorrow, just make sure you behave yourself. That was Liam in Coatbridge, 01419511025. Hearts, after we came off air last night, issued a statement. I've said that a few times over the summer, but they're not happy. They've not been able to continue their training. If any Hearts fans out there, any interested neutral, if there's such a thing, observers, get in touch. Let us know what you make of that. We'll look at the Hearts part in this next.
You are the voice of Scottish football. Call 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Darryl Broadfoot and Hugh Keevans here with me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. It's 0141 951 1025. I will ask again if you want to talk about what's happening on the pitch. Brilliant. Let's do that at some point. Please get your calls in. But of course, lots of you feeling very strongly about today's news regarding disciplinary action potentially for Celtic, for Aberdeen, and for the players involved in those breaches. Hearts, of course, are a major part of this as well. They issued a statement late last night. When we were on air yesterday, we told you that as part of the new guidelines brought in, anything below the Premiership, I can't train at the moment. Hearts had already started training, so they've been asked or told to cease training. I think it's August the 24th, if my memory serves me right. So they had been back about a week, I think, and now they're going to have to pause. And as you would expect, Hearts not too happy at all, issuing a statement last night. Hugh, we don't do sympathy across the board. That doesn't happen in Scottish football. What I have detected, though, is pretty much most people feel, from the outside looking in, that that's a little bit harsh on Hearts. Would you agree?
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
I think so. You know, would it hurt some vast eternal plan if Hearts were just allowed to keep on training? You know, I'm perfectly certain that Anne Budge has all the COVID-19 protocols in place. They've started, it's like Magnus Magnusson, they've started so they could finish. I think it's a bit harsh on them. I know there's a social media outrage because Hull City are in Edinburgh training there. But we, the SFA or the SPFL, have no jurisdiction over Hull City. So long as they are obeying the COVID-19 protocols, they can train in Edinburgh. But harsh on Hearts. There's a grievance culture at Hearts now. You can understand some of it.
Darrell, what would your take on that be? Because you're obviously very across the protocols and you've explained them very clearly, but just on a purely human level, if you like, for a group of people who've been allowed to go back to training and who feel like they are doing everything that they can, and in fact who haven't actually, as far as I know, been told that they're not doing everything right, to now be told that they have to stop training, is it unfair?
I can see from Hart's point of view why it feels unfair. And I think that depth of feeling is fueled by the sense of injustice at the way in which they were relegated from the Premiership. I keep saying perceptions, everything. So the perception is it's another kick for Hearts. The reality, and I go back to FM taken to the lectern to say Scottish football's on a yellow card. Add to that, Jason Leach, the current system is not working as intended and does not give me the confidence I need that the protocols are being followed.
To play the game of Alice in Wonderland, the First Minister's husband's a Hibs fan.
Oh, don't start, come on.
But put the other way, if, and let's be honest, Scottish football was staring at two rounds of fixtures going until Scottish football said, that's not a wise decision. We understand that the Aberdeen outbreak and the Ballingolly episode mean that certain games have to go, but we need to give you assurance and things that we will do to give Jason Leach that confidence. That included the temporary pausing of football from Premiership, from Championship down, including all adult football. You had Raith Rovers, Greenock Morton, and I think Ayr United, who have gone through the same testing regime and committed to starting training next week. So, to take Hugh's point on fairness, could you have said to Raith Rovers and Greenock Morton, sorry, we're having to pause this to give people the comfort that they need, to make sure that this message gets through. So you can't train, but Hearts, because they've already been training, can.
Would that be any harder to swallow for them than this is for Hearts, though?
But it becomes messy.
It was already messy, though.
Yeah, but it's messy. And again, to go back the way, Hearts were allowed to train for a couple of reasons. They were subject to arbitration, but also...
So they thought they maybe were going to be in the
Premiership
is what you mean by that.
Okay. That, committed to the testing procedures. They wanted to test and train. And so long as they can comply with that, they're fine. Mm. Every other club was invited to do that as well. But 12, 13, 14 weeks out from a new season, clubs thought that's too soon. So now 9 weeks out, clubs are starting to think we want to get back training. I don't think you can be half in, half out with that. The only stipulation was Glasgow City because they have a UEFA fixture. So while I sympathise or empathise with Hearts, the reality is when the First Minister and the clinical director say they need confidence and you're on a yellow card, you cannot risk this week opening up training and having an inadvertent yellow card that cancels the whole thing.
Okay, we'll revisit that Glasgow City point in just a second, but I do want to bring in Kenny, who is a Hearts fan from Airdrie. How does this make you feel, Kenny?
Gobsmacked, to be honest. Evening, guys.
Hi, Kenny.
Hi, Daryl and Hugh. Hope you're well, guys, and Gordon. Listen, I'm totally gobsmacked by the whole scenario. I mean, even as Daryl's mentioned there about Glasgow City are allowed to train still because they've got a European game. Is Hearts not got a Premier semi-final coming up for the Scottish Cup? You know,
but that's after their league comes back. That will be end of October. They've got Betfred and league matches before then.
Aye, but I'm just trying to be fair, Daryl. You know what I mean?
But so do the rest. So do Raith Rovers and Ayr United and all the teams who are wanting to come back training next week.
McKenny's talking about Scottish Cup, which they don't have, but you're talking about the timing. You don't think that's an issue because it's, I think it is. Somebody can tell me the
October 31st. Or do you mean for the Betfred?
No, the Scottish Cup, the semis. I think that's what Kenny, that's what you were on about, wasn't it, Kenny?
Scottish Cup semis.
October 31st and November the 1st. Yeah. So that's after the league starts.
You know, if we were in a season, Daryl, and Hearts, who, I don't know, probably the richest club in the championship, if they were able to buy players and nobody else had the money to buy players, you wouldn't stop them buying players because they were out on their own having money. And, as I say, if they had started training and they are following...
But it's not about players, it's about compliance with the protocols to get back. And other clubs were about to initiate that next week when football needed to pause to keep the government in confidence.
Is it the joint response group's role, remit, responsibility to worry about sporting fairness? Is that what you're saying this is about? Because, again, you know, you've mentioned how can we let
sporting integrity has become a bit of a default cliche.
But the point I'm trying to make is if it's supposedly gross, how is it so unfair on Morton Air, who was the other team you mentioned?
So Morton, Ayr United and Raith Rovers.
So if this had been flipped in its head and they were told, look, Hearts have already committed a lot of money and been part of the protocols for a long time, so they're able to continue and you're going to have to wait for a couple of weeks, how would that have been over the top unfair?
Listen, the problem in Scottish football is that lawyers hold sway now. So if you're preventing some people from doing what others can...
Yeah, fair, I get that.
You're on a hiding to nothing.
Kenny, on you go.
Daryl. Listen, Hearts were asked by the SFADs wanting to start training. So they put in procedure, which they've been billed for twice this week for doing the COVID test twice.
Yep.
And they were asked, do you want to train? And they said yes, so that was all happy and good.
Yep.
Now Hearts have took everybody off a furlough and signed players onto contracts. How is it fair that all of a sudden, because you can't go back on furlough, so how is that fair? I mean, that's why it feels like a smack in the teeth to me. What's happened to Hearts?
The furlough point, so they've been training already. And you're right, Hearts wanted to train in the event that if they retained their Premiership status, they didn't want a competitive advantage. I completely get that, and it's the right thing to do. The furlough point, it's interesting because, again, Hearts were due, and this was part of the conversation, Hearts were due, I think, they were going to go on holiday August the 22nd until the 30th. So that's 8 days off, and the common sense approach, if it wasn't for the fact that I get the persecution element, if the club wanted a week off, why not flip your holidays? And I get that it's not as perfect as that, but nobody's going to be flying abroad. Flip the holiday to next week, and so all you miss is one day's training. I presume that Hearts knew that they were having a week off 22nd to 30th provisionally, and that's not affecting the furlough principle that you'd mentioned.
On Glasgow City's point, and Kenny makes it, so the details that were revealed yesterday, Daryl, Glasgow City can continue to train in preparation for their UEFA Women's Champions League tie against Wolfsburg 21st of August. They will be visited to audit and verify compliance. Would it have been such a stretch to just do that with Hearts if you've got those fears? Because as you mentioned, there are risks here. We're on a yellow,
but there's no issue over with Hearts. It's not an issue of compliance. It's you need to give a pause so that you don't then say to others, we know we said you can go back, but you can't, and run the risk of a yellow card triggering a second red. So this week is about pausing training for a week with a season 9 weeks away to make sure that the message is re-emphasised, that whether it's Ian Maxwell or Neil Doncaster goes to their constituents and say, please heed the warning. We need to make sure that we are absolutely clear here. I gave you the analogy last night. For all of it, people still don't listen. But Scottish football can't have a situation where it wanders into a second yellow and it's shut down, and then the recrimination would start. You were warned by the First Minister, you were warned by the National Clinical Director, and you still went ahead with it. Because as unfair as it sounds, you look at the means that the Premiership clubs have the TV money, more staff than the rest. When you start to go down the divisions, the resource becomes more of a stretch, and that becomes a bigger risk. How can you be sure that the COVID officer and the compliance will be as specific and as detailed as the Premiership, when, bluntly, Celtic and Aberdeen's players, as soon as they're out the training ground, there have been issues? I think it's a risk that wasn't worth taking. And speaking to a few of the medics today, it is the right thing to do. It may not feel like it for certain people. It may not feel like it for a grassroots 17-year-old who, or 19-year-old who wants to go out in the park with five of his mates. That's the price you have to pay, because otherwise there would have been two rounds of fixtures cancelled and perilously close to shutdown.
Thank you very much, Kenny. Hopefully you enjoy the football when it eventually comes back. I'm sure we'll speak to you before then. Rob is a Rangers fan from Lark Hall. How's it going tonight, Rob?
Yeah, thanks, Pat. I'm really, really good. Good to hear you're all keeping well and safe, especially old Chug here. He's a national treasure.
he's been called worse, I can confirm that.
No doubts. Before I make my point, panel, just a quick one. I don't want Celtic and Aberdeen punished in terms of points.
Can we go over this point thing? The points are red herring.
Let Rob continue
before
first.
Before you start, it's good to listen sometimes and no talk.
A lesson I need to learn.
You better believe it. I don't want clubs punished in terms of points, and the reason being because I'm a Rangers fan, and in terms of sporting integrity and whatever else, if my club won the league this season, I'd like them to win it in merit. I'd like them to win it in merit, and the fact that everybody is on board in terms of points, okay? So I don't want to go see clubs being deducted points. But my point being is, earlier on, Hugh, despite being a national treasure, I take issue with you, Hugh, in the fact that clubs shouldn't be fined. Now, when clubs, football fans, go to Europe, they're not responsible for fans and what they do. And I say clubs, I'm not mentioning teams' names because there's a lot of clubs involved in it. When clubs go to Europe and the fans go to Europe and they cause havoc, clubs are actually fined. Now, clubs are actually responsible for players, which is a bit different. So players' actions should actually be relevant and clubs being fined, don't you think?
I said that I hope the clubs would not be dealt with too severely. I didn't mention that I was opposed to fines. If they get fined, that's the way it is. I've no opposition to fines. I just think that taking each case on its merits here, if Celtic play a game, the manager gives the players a couple of days off and issues a specific instruction: do not leave Glasgow. And if everything else with regard to COVID-19 is in order in terms of the biosecure bubble, one player takes that instruction and forgets all about it and goes off, and as I say, he is arrogant, he is deceitful, and he endangered the health of his teammates. Mm-hmm. But I really don't know the extent of Celtic's culpability. You know, they've been told, do not leave Glasgow. Celtic are adhering to all of the protocols, but this one individual goes rogue. Should the club really be dealt with that severely under those circumstances, Rob?
I genuinely think so, Hugh, as I say, because it's easy enough for...
Hello?
I actually think it's quite unfair sometimes that clubs are actually fined for fans' actions.
Bear in mind though, Robin, this is a whole separate point. We could do another show on it. You're right to talk about that happening in UEFA competition, but that actually doesn't happen here.
The other point I wanted to make as well is it's, with regards to players actually getting out of a secure bubble. You made a point about players maybe going to Argyle Street and whatever else, or Union Street. Yeah, that's actually pretty easy to manage. At the end of the day, I wouldn't curb players for actually going into Glasgow and whatever else. But going to Spain is a different matter. Now, we've been restricted the last 3 or 4 months by the government and actually going on holiday. We've been told we can't go to Spain. I've been personally affected, my family. So we've pretty much had our passports being taken off us in some respects. So I don't understand why players' passports can't be taken off them, because the only time players go abroad is when they go on holiday or when they go to Europe to play football. So I don't understand why players' passports can't actually be subject to the club's actual...
Well, it's a breach of your human rights.
Yeah, you know, it was common practice, as you say, I am at the age to be a national treasure. It was common practice when Jock Stein was manager of Celtic that all the players had to lodge their passports with the club. However, that was back in the 1960s. We are now millennium children, and it simply will not be allowed to happen. Now, the players have human rights, and this includes being able to hold on to your own passport. It includes not having to email or text the club to tell them where you are at any given point. So there's no reason why the Celtic players or the Aberdeen players or Rangers players or anybody's players cannot hold on to their own passport. They are being asked by Nicola Sturgeon to accept responsibility for themselves. Bolly Ballingolly did not do that, and therefore deserves all he gets.
I mean, Rob, you actually made the comparison there, though, you know, with yourself, and you said in some ways you've had your passport taken away, but you haven't, and then the situation should just be the same. You've still got your passport in your underwear drawer or wherever you keep it. It's up to you, but you don't use it if it's unless you're going to quarantine when you come back. Why would that be any different for Ballingolly or anyone else?
In all honesty, my passport's actually expired, so I couldn't go and hell on hold anyway, guys. But there you go, we found it the last minute. But I mean, in essence, I just think the fact that players, they don't go abroad during, they don't go abroad during maybe 2 or 3 days break normally. I don't think so anyway. So, but I'm not going to blame Ballingolly. At the end of the day, it's his actions, and he'll suffer repercussions. I don't think he should be sacked, because everybody's got a livelihood, he's got a family to look after, and whatever else. If I happened to a Rangers player, I'd say the exact same thing. The club should be fined, because the club should actually be managing their players better.
Listen, the world's a different place now. I've heard stories of a couple of players getting on a private jet and going to Vegas for the weekend because the money, the disposable income, such. So
Hamilton Aki's players, or
well, maybe no. Not, maybe not.
No offence, Hamilton. It was just the one.
There's
that's
a few
to
bits
mind.
That need to be unwrapped. Footballers must adhere to the government guidance. So Ballingolly breached government quarantine rules, not football rules. That was a kind of secondary breach. He breached the government's own quarantine guidelines. And that is the biggest issue that's faced Celtic at the moment, because obviously the way the testing works, while they have tested negatively, the infection or the potential for infection is a 14-day period. So while they might be negative now, if it wasn't for that 14 days, then they would be taking a risk that the clinical director doesn't want to take. The points thing, I get there's going to be a recurring theme. That's not on the table. That's not within the gift of the SPFL rules. So we need to park points deductions.
Good luck.
Yeah, well,
it's been rumbling on all week.
And the final point is strict liability. UEFA have strict liability, Scottish football doesn't. So the clubs have allegedly breached, not because of the players, but the requirements and testing regulations that are in place. That's a separate thing, and it may be proven that they haven't done that, but the rule's there and they have to go through the process.
Darrell Broadfoot alongside Hugh Keevans tonight. Robin Larkhall, thank you very much. If you get that passport renewed and you head off anywhere nice, I hope you enjoy yourself. This is the perfect time to get in touch. Travel with Stephen and you could be next.
0141 951 1025. This is Scottish football's league leader, Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Hugh Keevans and Darrell Broadfoot here with me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. And I mean, it's a Friday night, so it's always a pretty special time of the week. The sun is shining, but it's an extra special day in the Keevans household, and he's chosen to spend it with you and I, Darrell.
I think that says a lot about Janet's view on the anniversary.
Well, how many years today?
49.
49.
Yeah.
Wow. Some innings.
I was a child bride.
Janet deserves a medal, I think it goes without saying.
Bit of trivia for him, what do you reckon?
49 years ago,
what was the number one record when you were taking your nuptials?
Well, I'm going to leave that to him.
1971, the Beatles were split up by then, so I'm ruling them out.
That's so long ago.
Some people call you a dinosaur, Hugh. There's a clue.
Oh, is it T-Rex?
Oh.
Mark Bolan.
Yep, get it on.
Oh yeah,
they're but for a couple of weeks.
Okay. Was that the first dance?
No, we do a wee trio.
All right.
My wedding pictures are black and white. Because truly, they're all black and white. There was no colour then. And we do a little trio, you know, guy in the drums and a guitar player and some other guy. So there was no such thing as your first dance then. You know,
vows written in stone.
Picked the right day, because the week either side of it, you could have had Benny Hill or Middle of the Road.
Oh, goodness. Well, Sally Carr. I remember her coming up to our house once after a Radio Clyde do.
Gordon's zoned out now.
I have no idea what you're on about, sorry.
And my three children were young then, and this is going on midnight, and they all sneaked out of bed to have a look at the pop star sitting in the living room.
Right, very quickly, because we've not managed to give as much attention to Twitter because there's so many calls, but I need these answers to be quite brief. Brian wants something cleared up. I was at Heriot Watt yesterday. Hull FC were there in training. That's the same place as Hearts. Don't understand this.
Okay. Hull.
No jurisdiction.
Not Scottish football jurisdiction. Orium, commercial organisation, doing a deal so long as they comply with government guidelines.
Yeah. Watty is on, says the panel expertly, I suspect he's been sarcastic, go on about players' human rights with regards to passports, but it's okay for the player's employer to order them not to leave a certain city. Is that not a breach of human rights? No. I would guess it was probably more of a guideline than a warning. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they are trying to look after the safety of their players, and by so doing, look after public health in general. And Ballingolly simply disregarded all of that and did whatever he liked.
Donnie's on the phone. How's it going, Donnie?
How's it going, mate? All right?
Yeah, not bad at all. What have you got for us?
Basically, guys, just to get your thoughts on this, but I think it's fair to say that the clubs probably shouldn't be held responsible for what the Aberdeen and Ballingolly did. But look, my concern is that when the league eventually gets around to playing these games that they've missed, are they going to have to play them under the restrictions that's currently now? So does that mean that the Celtic and Aberdeen play the games under closed doors, or if by the time they get to play them and their fans are all back in, would that see them kind of currently maybe benefiting from the situation?
Also, well, I mean, really.
Well, yeah,
fair though, I can tell you're about to shoot this down, and yeah. But you can see.
What makes you think that?
you can see why these questions are arising, Hugh, because what we've got is two worlds colliding. We've got health concerns and sporting concerns, and they're colliding, and people are now saying, will this team be without X players or not? Should the player, Craig Gray is making a similar point on Twitter. How is it fair that when the fixture comes around, these players are now free to play in it? Will they benefit from home advantage?
We've got
relevant questions.
We've got no wonder Darryl spoke earlier about lawyers running the game now. We've got an obsession now with, but, you know, I mean, we've got a congested fixture list of domestic games, European games, international matches. We'll be very, very lucky to finish this season, given all the fixture congestion that's coming ahead. Now, if by the time Aberdeen go to Celtic Park, crowds are allowed back in, and I suspect not very many people are allowed back in, that's just the way it is. Celtic and Aberdeen didn't plan it that way. They have been overtaken by circumstances. I mean, I fail to see what difference it makes behind closed doors or a few thousand people there. I fail to see what difference it makes.
It won't make a difference, or it might make a difference to the outcome. The point I was going to make is, if you can get to a point when that fixture's replayed and there are fans, you try telling a fan of the home team that despite the fact they're allowed back in, despite the fact they've paid £400 for a season ticket, they can't go back in because the game was originally scheduled and we're behind closed doors. You have to.
We're going out of our way to look for problems now.
Donny, do you think that would be a concern?
Well, I do, because it's okay, it's not the club's fault, but the reality of the matter is they would have had to play that game, and surely they had to play the game under the circumstances they would have. If it wasn't for these players, and it is these players, it's not the club's.
Well, do you think supposing, Donny, the fixture was scheduled to take place in the early days of August in the sunshine, supposing it's raining or snowing, should it not go ahead then?
That's not the point.
I don't think it's any more mad than what you've just said.
Well, it's uncontrollable though. The factors that Donny mentions are controllable.
Well, I repeat, we've got a severely congested fixture list. We are dealing with circumstances out with our control. When they play the game, when fans are allowed back in, and we don't know when that will be, they will not be allowed back in. There's no 60,000 at Celtic Park, that's for sure. As I say, we are going out of our way to look for problems now.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Thank you very much, Donny in Campbelltown. Some decent points. Hugh is not having it. I'll try and win him over during the news. What you can do during the news is give us a call for Beat the Pundit, 0141 951 1025. The lines close at 7, so be quick. We might do something crazy after Beat the Pundit and try and talk about actual football on the pitch.
tackle the headlines. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Hugh Keevans is here. Darryl Broadfoot is alongside him. We've kicked the coronavirus ball around the studio for the last hour. Let's try something radical and talk about what's going to happen on the pitch this weekend. Of course, if you've still got thoughts on today's announcement regarding punishments or potential punishments for Aberdeen and Celtic, Ball and Golly and Aberdeen 8, more than happy to try and squeeze more in. But let's try and talk football as well. Big games tomorrow: Hamilton St Mirren, Killy St Johnstone, Ross County Dundee United, Hibs Motherwell. And then on Sunday, of course, Rangers trying to build on their advantage at the top when they go to Livingston. So any thoughts ahead of the weekend's action, signing news, any of the usual topics at this time of year, get them in, and we'll do this first.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Darryl Broadfoot's previous performance on Beat the Pundit was so bad that he's had to quarantine for 6 months since. But we've let him back tonight, and we'll see if he gets on any better. John is playing tonight from Muirkirk. How's it going, John?
Not so bad, how are you?
Yeah, can't complain at all, John. I don't suppose you've ever played Beat the Pundit before, have you?
No, this is the first time.
Man, first time. Did you just sit and wait all week and think Keevans and Broadfoot will have a piece of that?
Yes, definitely.
Pretty much. At least he's honest. I like that. We'll toss the coin and find out your victim, John. If it's heads, it is Mr. Keevans. And if it's tails, it's still Darryl. He doesn't get Mr. yet. And it is tails. Yes. Darryl Broadfoot taking on John from Yorkshire.
Congratulations, John.
Nah, like, there are two ways of looking at it. You set the bar so low last time that it can't be any worse.
That's, I never got relegated.
You did not. You were saved. Right. So I'll give Darryl some Clyde 2 to listen to John. So it's just you and I, no cheating going on here. 30 seconds going on the clock. You can pass. That's everything you need to know. You ready?
Yes.
Good man, John. Your 30 seconds starts now. Albion Ayeti joined Celtic from which side?
West Ham.
Name either of Motherwell's goal scorers on Wednesday.
Pass.
Who did Barcelona face tonight?
Pass.
What nationality is Hamilton's David Moyo?
Irish.
Which side finished second in last year's Scottish Championship?
Inverness.
How many goals were scored in the 2010 World Cup final?
4.
Okay, let's bring Darryl back. Darryl, can you hear us?
Yep.
Same set of questions to you. 30 seconds on the clock. Time starts now. Albion Ayeti joined Celtic from which side?
West Ham.
Name either of Motherwell's goal scorers on Wednesday.
Oh, Turnbull.
Who did Barcelona face tonight?
Bayern.
What nationality is Hamilton's David Moyo?
Swiss.
Which side finished second in last year's Scottish Championship?
It was Inverness.
How many goals were scored in the 2010 World Cup final?
5.
Okay, John, how do you think that went?
I think he just beat me.
Just beat you. Let's find out. First one, Albion Ayeti joined Celtic from West Ham. You both got it. Well done. And honestly, John, the sigh of relief on Darryl Broadfoot's face when he knew that he'd got one, and he was off and running, and he didn't care what happened thereafter. But you both got it. Who scored for Motherwell on Wednesday? You had the choice of Turnbull or Campbell, but you passed it. So it's 2-1 to Darryl. Barcelona faced Bayern Munich tonight. I can't quite get used to this Champions League every night, but it's
that's
through
me.
I know. I think producer Dan was quite harsh. I think he should have put in the Champions League tonight, if I'm being honest. But there we go. Bayern Munich 3-1 to Darryl. I had a bit of a chuckle at this one, John, because I mean, you weren't to know. And do you know what? The name David Moyo, Irish, it's not the worst guess. It's just he's Zimbabwean, which is not that close to Ireland. But nevertheless, the Darryl didn't get it either. It's 3-1. Good memory though, John, because you plucked this one out. Inverness finished second in last year's championship. Sadly for you, Darryl got it as well. So it's 4-2. How many goals were scored in the 2010 World Cup final? You've both built it up to be better than it was. It was one. Andres Iniesta for Spain against the Netherlands. So there we go. Oh, John, well, do you know what? Fairly tough questions, and you got two. Not too bad at all. But Darryl has pipped you 4-2. Hard lines.
Right, no problem. Cheers.
Good man, that was John and Muirkirk.
It's not going to get any better for me, so that's see you later, guys.
Yeah. It's just you and I until 8 o'clock. Your chance to beat the pundit back on Monday night at the same time. So listen out for the shout and you can give us a call. Right, Hugh, 0141 951 1025. Like I say, I'm going bold. Friday night, a matter of hours before we have actual Premiership football. Let's try tentatively. What are you looking forward to this weekend?
Ross County made a great start to the season, 7 points out of nine. That must be a worry for Hamilton, who are well behind now. So I'm enjoying their progress, because I was the one who said Hamilton would go down and Ross County would be 11th. But it won't last.
Game of the day for me tomorrow, Hibs Motherwell.
Yeah. Hibs are flying, aren't they?
Absolutely flying. And sadly, Motherwell, who, you know, what a season last season. It's just not working yet. I think the parts of Hartley and Tate have taken a bit of experience out the back line. And, you know, it's only three games in, but I think Steve Robinson, I get his frustration, but needs to decide who his first choice striker is, needs to understand what his strongest lineup is. Because Hibs are relentless. I think Gogic has made a huge difference for them.
Are you entitled to know what your strongest lineup is after three games?
I think the extent of the substitutions, the extent of the kind of rotation this early, you can permit. But you look at how settled they were, you could almost predict how they were going to set up, and the minimum level of performance. That would be the biggest frustration for them.
I think Gary Holt must have been delighted to see the equaliser going at Fir Park to make it 2-2, because, you know, who wants to start with three straight defeats and your next game is against Rangers, who have started with three straight wins and no loss of goals. So that was a big goal for him.
Which leads me on nicely, Hugh, to the link between this coronavirus footballing drama and what's actually happening on the pitch. Is it's another chance for Rangers to just get those points on the board before such times as Celtic are allowed to play again.
Daryl and I are two old hacks, and we understand that this is a good headline grabber. You know, by the time Celtic play, Rangers will be 11 clear. A perfectly legitimate journalistic tactic. Steven Gerrard's not saying it. The press are saying it. And I have no doubt it will be true. But Celtic's job is to keep calm, understand that in theory, if they win the games that they have still to play and catch up with Rangers, in theory, they're 2 points behind. So it's a nice way to get us going early in the season. But Celtic will, in Neil Lennon's head, he'll know 2 points behind.
We're about to hear from Steven Gerrard, but let's hear first from Scott in Postle Park. Scott's a Rangers fan. What's in your mind tonight, Scott?
Hey, hi there, panel. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
I was listening to the show last night, and I heard a caller saying about Barisic. I think it's been worth the same amount as Morelos or more. And I was sure one of the panelists said, but you always get more for strikers than you do defenders. But I agree with you, the guy last night. Maybe it depends who the striker and that is. Because, see, Borna Barisic, if Tierney goes for $25 million, right, he's a Scottish left back, and Barisic is a Croatian first pick, probably, in the defence. I think he's the most consistent Rangers player for the past two seasons, easily. And see, any time we get a free kick outside the box, and I see, like, Tavernier or Hadji stepping up to him, I'm like, no, get away, let it Barisic. Honest, and that's the truth. I'm not just saying that because I'm speaking to you. But honest to God, man, I just pray that maybe Fairley comes in and takes him away. The guy is world class. He's brilliant, man. Honest to God.
I think if it was a Kieran Tierney type offer, then Rangers would be failing in their duty if they didn't consider it. But
I'm not saying that we didn't know, I know, but I'm just saying if Tierney, a Scottish international left back, goes for $25 million, what is a Croatian?
Well, I'm not sure that nationality matters, because they were both playing the same country. But my feeling, my overriding feeling about everything relative to Celtic and Rangers this season, it's all about 10 in a row. The winning of it, the stopping of it. And I don't think that the Rangers fans would be happy at all to see Barisic go.
He's the most improved Rangers player. If you bear in mind, when he first came, didn't get on, was dispatched to the reserves. John Flanagan was playing left back ahead of him. I think he's a terrific player. He is world class. We'll see. He's certainly international class. One goal, two assists already this season. They're a better team with Barisic at left back. There is no doubt about it. He's a terrific player. And we're always quick to get players away from Scotland. Let's enjoy the fact that we've got somebody as accomplished as him playing in the Premiership.
Scott, is he then, in your mind, if you had to pick one, is he Rangers' most important player, the one that you would struggle to replace the most? What sort of tag would you give him then? You're giving him lots of praise. How do you see him within that squad?
Within the Rangers squad, I would say he's one of the most definitely the most. He's the most consistent by a country mile. A country mile is the most consistent. He really, I think he really calm under pressure as well. In every game, he can be. At first, when I seen him, I was like, "Ah, he can't beat a player. He can't." But then he started getting by players. The goal set up that I make is the exact same as the one for Ryan Kent against Celtic. And by the way, do you know I'm a pure Rangers fan? Guess what my second name is?
Barisic.
Scott Bain. Scott, same as the Celtic goal.
Scott Bain. We've got Scott Bain on the line trying to sell Barisic for 30 million.
Everyone understands that there will be conjecture about Morelos for as long as the transfer window lasts. But I think in his mind, Steven Gerrard will be saying, okay, Morelos might go. And I'll have money to reinvest in the team. But that's it. He represents the transfer that we'll be doing, because I've got to stop this 10 in a row. So what will be with Morelos. But I don't think there's any chance of Barisic being sold. And there is an interest. Leeds United, I think, were quoted as having an interest in him, etc, etc, etc. But I think Steven Gerrard will be saying Morelos can go, the rest can't.
Let's put it another way. If Rangers are to wrestle a title off Celtic going for 10 in a row, they need to keep their best players, and Barisic becomes one half of a partnership that will be integral to doing that. Ryan Kent, last year, flatter to deceive. And you look at what won the league for Celtic last year. Edward, yes, but the three players around him who scored double figures. And Rangers need Kent to hit double figures. They need Hadji, both in assists and goals. They need goals from elsewhere. And Barisic, from his deliveries at set pieces and his assists, will be a huge asset.
Scott, why don't you just hang there and get your thoughts on this? Good timing. Steven Gerrard says Leon Balogun will miss the trip to Livingston on Sunday with a quad problem. The Rangers boss says he's now got a tough choice on who partners Conor Goldson this weekend.
He won't be available for the weekend. He's got a small quad problem. We're still waiting for some scan results to confirm that, but he's certainly ruled out for the weekend. Look, we'll pick the two best centre-backs we believe are capable of getting the right results. You know, we won't really focus on any individual players that we're going to be coming up against. Phil came on the other night and done extremely well. George has had a real strong pre-season, so I'll leave it as late as I need to and then make a decision who partners Connor, because I think Connor's in excellent form, deserves to keep his place, and I'll make a late decision on Phil and George in the coming days.
Defensive options are there, Scott. Who would you pick at the weekend?
Big Philip Hollander, solid man. I think the big man's brilliant. But the big, I call him Philip the Highlander, see the Hollander. Brilliant man.
Don't really know how to top that. I don't know what nickname could we give you, Hugh Keevans. I don't think we'll open that
You remember I told you about Nicola Sturgeon and an Aberdeen strip and how St Mirren.
I don't go there again. 2 weeks in a row. Come on.
No. I'll simply say I could play beside Conor Goldson and Rangers would still win at Livingston.
What a sight that is. What a sight. No, listen, that's the test. Celtic fell down in the 3G test or the 4G test. This will be a test for Rangers at the weekend as well. Livy have had a pretty ropey start to the season, but you know what you get against them. They work hard, they're in your faces. Defensively, I don't think they're as strong as they were last season. I would put Edmondson in purely because I think he's got fitter over the course of pre-season. I know Hollander's probably the favourite and he got a bit of game time during the week, but I think Edmondson, when he replaced Katic, I think looked accomplished.
Something you Rangers fans might be interested in, and other fans around Scottish football, because Steven Gerrard says Ross McCrory has made it clear he wants to leave Rangers, with Hibs launching a second bid for the player. He also says Greg Docherty is in talks with Hull.
I think that's a tough question to answer in terms of how close they are. That'll depend on numerous factors, but you know, Greg's had permission to speak to Hull. I'm told them talks are ongoing. Greg's in this morning, so the plan's to catch up with him after this morning's session. But I know they are locked in talks. So there's no really update on that situation. But that is as close as the talks have gone, which I'm not aware of at the moment. But that could happen at any given moment. Or, you know, it might happen. I think it'll boil down to what Greg's decision is. In terms of Ross, we knocked something back from Hibs, and I believe they have come again. So that's moved a little bit closer. The plan again is to catch up with Ross this morning. He's told me clearly that he wants to move on. But at the same time, you know, I think the ball is in Hibs court now to match what we want.
I get pretty much all my feedback on these issues here. That's where I live, and it's on the phones or on Twitter. And these two players in particular, Hugh and Darrell, always struck me as players that actually most Rangers fans liked and would really have loved to see do well, but they would now possibly kind of hold their hands up and admit that they just can't quite kick on and become part of that starting 11, or even, you know, the group of subs that then comes on thereafter.
Neither will play anything remotely near regularly for Rangers. So for the sake of their own careers, they should get out and go somewhere else. And, you know, it's funny, Hibs, terrific start to the season. When Kevin Nisbet signed, everyone said, oh, buying players. When players have been asked to take wage cuts and deferrals and all sorts. But when it's 9 points out of nine, buy another player. Oh, lovely, yes, we'll have that.
It shows how Rangers have tooled up to try and stop 10 in a row, because I think Ross McCrory in particular is a terrific player, but they're both at, what, 22, 23. They need to get out and play more often. Stephen Davis on the bench, Scott Arfield on the bench. Chances are going to be limited. I would probably keep Ross McCrory, because I think if Ryan Jack gets injured, he's the more natural holding midfielder. They don't have too many options like that.
Are they going to sign one though then if those two depart?
Potentially. I know there's been speculation, but they need to get out now, because talented young Scottish players are no longer young prospects at 22 and 23. Dockery went down to Shrewsbury and I think won player of the year. So there's no doubt they will go and be a success elsewhere, but this season of all seasons, Stephen Gerrard's clearly not taking chances.
Hibs fans would like that, I would imagine. They needed an enforcer and they got one in Alex Gogic. It could turn out to be one of the best pieces of business of the summer. You know, if you could add another one in there,
or somebody who can play centre back and equally accomplished middle of the park. I think if Hibs pursue it and if they've got the money, he would be an absolutely terrific signing. And you'd look at Hibs not only as top six certainties, but a club going for European spots.
Okay, I think we'll park that one for the moment. Thank you very much. 01419511025. Twitter, we are at Clyde SSB. Got a full time teaser coming up for you. There's a 10 players, that's all I'm telling you. There's a bit of a Scotland theme, but there's a club consideration as well in there, so you're going to have to put your heads together, see what you can come up with. I'll give you the question next.
Taking your calls on Scottish football. 0141 951 1025. This is Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Darrell Broadfoot and Hugh Keevans here with me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. If you've got thoughts on the announcement today that Aberdeen and Celtic could face disciplinary action for coronavirus breaches, then feel free to get in touch. The Ball and Golly and the Aberdeen 8, as they've now become known. You can't be bothered running through their names every time, so no. It is understandable. And I'm very hesitant to ask for another nickname for the group as a whole. I just don't think we can risk it on a family show.
No, never mind. Just leave it leave that where you are.
We are trying to preview tomorrow's football as well though, so if your team's in action and you've got thoughts, we'd love to hear them. 01419511025. Before we do that though, we do have a full-time teaser for you. If you've never heard this before, at this time, every night, you send the question to us and we try and ruin the pundit's night, really, by seeing if they can come up with the answer. So, Jerry has been in touch with this one. Thank you to Jerry for sending it in. It's fulltime@clyde1.com if you want to send it. fulltime@clyde1.com. He says, can you name 10 players since 2008 who've been capped by Scotland whilst at Dundee United? I'm thinking, Darrell, we've found a bit of a niche for you here. Scotland hat on.
Craig Levine.
Shankland.
Yes.
Paul Dixon, Gary Kenneth.
Gary Kenneth, two caps in 2010. Paul Dixon, three caps. Yes, well done. I'll leave it there. I think that's a good start. You can play along with us on Twitter if you want, at Clyde SSB. 10 players since 2008, capped by Scotland whilst at Dundee United. Guys like Paul Dixon,
Andy Robertson,
Gary Kenneth, Lawrence Shankland. Yes, we'll definitely leave
it
there.
Stop there, I'll be quiet.
That was only his first cap though. The rest were at Hull and Liverpool. It was just was it Poland away? Anyway, I think it was. But it was his first cap was whilst at Dundee United. So Robertson, Dixon, Kenneth, Shankland, and another six to get. We'll get them between now and the end of the show. We will hear soon from Motherwell's new signing, Stephen O'Donnell. Well, fans, are you happy with that? Kilmarnock fans, are you surprised to see him swap Rugby Park for Fir Park over the summer? But let's check in with David and Carfin first. Hi, David.
Hi, gents. How you doing?
Not bad at all. Are you well?
Aye, not bad. Good. Not bad. It's really about Celtic's defence. I know Hugh's been pretty critical of Julian and Ayer.
No, it doesn't sound like him.
I think obviously it's been talked that Shane Duffy is on Celtic's radar, and I've fancied him for years for Celtic. I think he would be exactly what we need when it comes to a domineering centre half, especially if we play at a back three with him in the middle and both of them either side. That's my first point.
Well,
yeah, what do you think about that?
I'll make no comment at all on Ayer and Julian. I'll leave that. All I will say to you is
finally
that Neil Lennon said he needed a central defender. I believe he needs two. I believe that in this of all seasons, if Rangers have got four, you should have four. And Rangers have four good ones. So Shane Duffy, I think, would be an outstanding signing for Celtic with his Premier League experience down south. It would be a no-brainer. As ever, David, you've got to go through the agents, the player, this, that, the other. They'll all do their rain dances. But I believe that Duffy would like to join Celtic, given that there is the prospect of Champions League football.
There's 2 points. You look at how Celtic turned the season in their favour after the Old Firm defeat last season. They went away from 4-2-3-1 and went to 3-5-2. And they had Simunovic then, but Lee Griffiths fully fit as well. And I think one leads to the other. They need numbers. Neil Beaton is probably next in line as a centre-back, but Neil Lennon's probably loath to do that because there's no Lee Griffiths, and do you take a risk on Klimala? Lo and behold, you've got Ayeti in, and I think a centre-back's needed for the duration of the season, but also I think Celtic looked at their best with that 3-5-2 formation. And that's before you get into the folk who deal in algorithms, Hugh, who will tell you, who will give you the stats and show that the 3-5-2 with Scott Brown in versus the 4-2-3-1 at the moment and completely different in how Celtic are set up. So I think Neil Lennon might want to give consideration to 3-5-2 again if he's got Ayeti in and you can get a centre-back, because otherwise another blip like the one against Kilmarnock and suddenly, to take Hugh's point, the psychological battle becomes all the more difficult.
Is that the way you see it, David, that it would be twofold? If it's going to be two centre-backs, well, you've got competition there for Julian and Ayer, and if it's going to be three, then, well, you need a third one anyway.
Definitely. I'd also make signing Aaron Hickey a priority for Celtic. To have two good young Scottish left-backs. My second point is about the artificial surfaces and Celtic's results on them over the past few years, even during the Invincible season. I think if you keep doing the same thing all the time and playing the way we play and all the other surfaces on grass, obviously, and you expect different results, it's just not going to happen. I think that Celtic need to adopt a more direct approach when it comes to 3G subsidies, because our football's not working on it. When we play Kelly and we play Livingston, I've never seen his given Hamilton a doing either. I just think that we should be a bit more direct, and I think actually we could be doing with another striker again, and we were looking at another one as well, obviously Lee Griffiths. I love Griff, but don't know what's happening, and I think everybody's been saying that the Lyndon Dykes for Rangers was a goer. I think Lyndon Dykes would be a good buy for Celtic for that reason, so we can be more direct.
Nah, I don't think it's Neil Lennon's way of playing football. He's not going to put up a Lyndon Dykes up front. He wants Edouard and he wants a Yeti. I'm not sure that Patrick Klimala will do the job. I'm not sure about Lee Griffith's future at the club. I think if there's money to be spent, central defenders first and foremost.
Make a good point on the 3G though, and you look back to last year when they played in Cham and Griffiths, they created three times the chances than they did on plastic pitches without them. That's what I was meaning about the kind of algorithms. Now, this is not Football Manager. Neil Lennon has to manage, but the stats are there. With an Cham and Griffiths in the team last season against Kilmarnock and Accies, over, and I don't want to get into XG's expected goals, but infinitely higher than without them. I think there's a real selection dilemma for Neil Lennon in not having Olivier Cham in his team. I think he has to find a way to put him in there.
I get what you're saying, David, and we hear this a lot in football, don't we, that, you know, the so-called plan B. But if you are working so hard on a style of football that allows you to become the dominant side or one of the dominant sides in the country, are you able to just switch it off once, twice, three, maybe four times a season and stick a big guy up there and start booting the ball up to him?
I'm not saying stick a guy up there, but at the end of the day, six, I mean, more than a six almost your league is potentially could be played on these sub-season. Every time Celtic play on them, I mean, I think everybody would say over the past few years Celtic are the best footballing team in the league. So why do they not get points at these grounds?
It's not every time. Last year, Kelly and Aki's 3-1 and 4-1. The point I was making, that was 3-5-2 with Cham and Griffiths in the team, as opposed to 4-2-3-1 against Aki's and Livy's, were more of a struggle.
I mean, there does come a point where how many strikers can you sign? Griffiths is there, Kamal is there. I know Bayo has gone off to Toulouse, but you've just spent 5 million on Ayeti. Edouard is there.
What do you make of that signing? Because it only happened yesterday, well, and we've not spoken to you since.
It's good money that Celtic have paid out there. You know, they've got a goalkeeper and a striker for £10 million. It's a lot of money to be shelling out at a time when you're losing money hand over fist because of the coronavirus. His numbers at West Ham were poor, perhaps deceptively poor, because he didn't get that much time out on the park, but he had 12 appearances, didn't score a goal. However, in Switzerland, he was a prolific goal scorer.
West Ham signed him for £8 million, which I know in Premier League terms isn't massive amounts, but sufficient for a guy who'd scored.
But he didn't get a lot of time on the park, and there was a change of manager, so you could put it down to just the wrong place at the wrong time. And he does seem to be very enthusiastic about playing for Celtic, so he's eligible for Tuesday night against KR Reykjavik. I think, albeit that the fans are watching on television, I think they would like to see him at some point.
Is that a signing that excites you, David?
100%. Obviously, I think the level with the Swiss League, if we look back before the West Ham time, the level of the Swiss League is probably comparable to ours. And to me, he's actually a player like Griffiths, just dynamic. And I think his partnership with Edouard would be great. But I just think that we should... We need to, as you say, on these surfaces, I'll go back to it. I fear, actually, that the points dropped at these parks that's already started this season could come back to bite us.
I think the template's there. I think early part of the season, and I genuinely didn't think, naively, that Rangers or Celtic would lose many points until October 17th. But it's probably focused the mind. So, Ayeti, I think, was a show of strength from Celtic. They've watched Kemar Roofe, they've watched Cedric Itten signed for Rangers and realised we need to get another striker of quality, and just as they'd signed the goalkeeper. And as I say, an £8 million signing from Basel for West Ham, granted didn't get much game time in England, but when you add him to Klamala and Edouard, who is the prized possession, it puts more question marks on Lee Griffiths.
Yeah.
Celtic cannot afford to wait for Lee Griffiths to get back up to full speed, and that for me is a signing of intent. Somebody to come in, £4.5 million, and threaten their way into the first team.
Is that... that'll be Celtic done in that department. I know David, you know, if David was in charge, he'd go for Lyndon Dykes, or he would go something similar. At the moment, Celtic play one striker. They do sometimes play two, as we've just discussed, and they may well play two. But they've got four, Hugh, now. Yeah. And it's not like it's four... you know, it's not like the fourth man is someone who you can't really picture playing. You know, the fourth man at the moment's Lee Griffiths.
Yeah.
And you are still to be won over by Klamala, but he's there, and he's worked hard, and they spent a few million quid on him as well, and Neil Lennon seems to be quite encouraged by what he's done over the summer.
Well, at least he's full of enthusiasm for the job. Neil Lennon has to find out what's left in Lee Griffiths' tank, because it's unsatisfactory. He comes back out of shape, manager falls out with him, then the manager says he's in tip-top condition, he's worked hard to get back to his best, doesn't appear, then he's got an injury, then there's the business of having a party in his house and possibly being in breach of COVID regulations, but we haven't heard any more about that from Celtic. So I just think that Ayeti's keen, Edouard is the proven deal, and El Yanoussi has a past with Ayeti, and they could do something together as well. So that area of the field is taken care of for me. The central defensive area, I think, has to be sorted now.
Yep, need a centre-back. Lee Griffiths likes proving people wrong. He likes telling people.
Yeah, he's done it before, hasn't he?
And he's a complex individual. I'd be loath to write him off, but Celtic's habitual top goal scorer, you know, the person who played around and still got game time and 20, 30 goals in the Dembele era, is now fourth choice striker. This is his biggest test yet, but if Celtic can get their fourth choice striker in a mood, then that changes the whole dynamic of that front line. But as it stands, I think Edouard is untouchable. It's do you go with two, or do the rest have to wait in the wings for a shot?
Thank you very much, David and Kerfin. Have a good weekend. 141-951-1025 if you would like to join. And let's hear from a new signing in the Premiership. Stephen O'Donnell says a short-term deal at Motherwell's the perfect fit after rejecting a new contract at Kilmarnock. The defender has joined at Fir Park till January, the club hoping to extend the offer. He says it wasn't the only option he had on the table at the moment.
I had an interest in going back down south, if it was right for myself and my family. And the offers that I had a couple of offers that they weren't right. And it's as simple as that. They weren't, whether that was financially, the club, all round, it didn't matter. It needed to be right for my family, first and foremost. And I don't think I could get any more right than 2 minutes down the road. So I would certainly get plenty of time to spend with my wee man. So no, I was fairly relaxed about everything. I had ideas in my head what needed to be and what wasn't. And it wasn't, so I was happy with that. Talking maybe waiting a bit longer, but I've waited enough. I was fed up in the house, albeit I was training with Aki's, which was brilliant. It's a solution for both parties. I think they needed the quick term fix, or not fix, but obviously they needed replacements in. So it was good for me to come in, get football, and if the two is, if I'm doing well and they're happy, I'm sure there'll be discussions. But equally, they have the flexibility that if I have a stinker, they can go off you pop. So it's a good decision for both.
A real positive outlook on life, Stephen O'Donnell. And at the moment, Stephen Robinson, the manager, appears to be highly critical of some Motherwell players. So I assume that Stephen O'Donnell will walk into the team.
You can tell by the reaction, Daryl, you know, last night on Twitter or wherever it may be, people sort of raising an eyebrow and going, okay, Motherwell signing a guy that's got 11 Scotland caps. Listen,
it's
ultimately
a current Scotland player. It's the COVID reality for players who pre-virus wanted to run their contracts down and probably assumed I'll get a championship club in England on five figures a week. The reality is championship clubs at the moment have no idea what their financial certainty is. So Stephen needs to play, wants to preserve his Scotland position. Great move for Motherwell, and everybody wins.
And you sometimes forget that these guys are humans and they've got families, and he mentions they're having a young son and he lives 2 minutes away from Fir Park.
He's spending too much time on the telly and radio to be a current professional footballer. And, he might joke about it, but he's clearly...
How did the Aki's feel? He was training with them, then he signs for their Lanarkshire rivals.
Well, I would imagine would depend on whether they ever thought that he was going to sign there. Listening to Brian Rice, I don't think he did.
Shades of Craig Gordon training at Murray Park before the offer came in.
Naughty boy.
Yeah, you mentioned that Hugh Stephen Robinson critical of his players, and he goes up against a high flying Hibs side this weekend.
From a journalistic point of view, I'll go back to my days and Darrell's days with the newspapers. From a journalistic point of view, you listen to that rant after the game and think, latterly, can't wait to get back upstairs to the typewriter, laptop.
Showing his age.
Quilling parchment.
Get it all sent back to the office. But if you are a Motherwell player, three games in, and the manager is ripping you apart, not sure about that as a tactic.
He's gone in early. He's gone in very early. And no pun intended, you could only go to that well so many times. I understand the frustration, but equally, he's almost got too many similar options up front. And I think even from the striker's point of view, that's certainty. I'm the number one striker. And that confidence comes with it, as opposed to the nervousness of, I'm in this week. If I don't do it or I have a bad touch, I'm back out the following week. And also, a much coveted, sought-after manager who has been linked with lots of jobs before. So I didn't quite agree with the agents filling players' heads
All right, still time for you to get calls in on any of tonight's topics. 01419511025. On tonight's teaser, thanks to Jerry for sending it. Remember, fulltime@clyde1.com. We always need your questions, so send them over. Get out in the sun and think
of
a question for us.
Do you need some more answers?
10 players since 2008 have been capped by Scotland whilst at Dundee United. Colin Moffat, amongst others on Twitter, doing not too badly. You've got Andy Robertson, Paul Dixon, Gary Kenneth, Lawrence Shankland. I'll take one each if you've got them.
Go on then.
Craig Conway.
Oh, brilliant. Hugh, listen, you got any?
Listen, come over here, young man.
Oh.
Craig Conway written down there. Barry Robson?
Yes, well done.
Craig Bryson?
No. All right, we'll leave it there. You've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 down, 4 to get. Get them next, and your calls as well.
Number one for football in Glasgow and the West. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
It's Darryl Broadfoot and Hugh Keevans in the final part of tonight's show, but still plenty of time to get your calls in or your tweets. Just quickly on this teaser, let me check in on you. 10 players since 2008 that have been capped by Scotland whilst at Dundee United. You're doing pretty well, actually. Andy Robertson, Paul Dixon, Gary Kenneth, Barry Robson, Craig Conway, Lawrence Shankland. What did you do during the break? Anything productive?
I just had a look. Well, Hugh agreed that there was another big, gruff centre back which we had scribbled down.
Big, ugly defender.
Big,
I said.
Ugly. I was trying to be charitable to you can name
and
him.
You came
I'm
up with
trouble.
Andy Webster.
Yep, he was on loan, but I'll give you Andy Webster. Three to get.
Does he sometimes frequent this studio, or is that am I?
Nah.
Too
Mark
late.
Wilson, Mark Wilson.
So he would have been
good.
Earlier.
One cap wonder.
One cap.
At Celtic as well. Yeah.
Okay.
Any more for any more?
So, what, three left?
Yeah. We'll get back to you.
Okay. Yeah, three left. We'll get them before the end of the show. We're still on the phones and we're on Twitter. A few people making this point earlier on the coronavirus stuff. Another season. Another treble's on asking. I like this as well. He's got a barb at the start. It says, so just like my tweets. You're ignoring the fact that three clubs knowingly played players, albeit in friendlies. In the case of one team, nine players who did not have sufficient COVID-19 protocols and not action is taken. I guess he means no action is taken. This is obviously going back a couple of weeks, maybe even a couple of months now, a couple of weeks. This was Motherwell, Hibs, Rangers. There was some sort of investigation. Darryl, why? What was the outcome of that, and why is this separate from what we're seeing at the moment with Aberdeen and Celtic.
Two things in two slightly separate cases, and I go back to First Minister last season saying yellow cards. So principle of JRG was to help support clubs through to compliance, not to beat them over the head. Motherwell, I don't think had done anything wrong. It was the testing laboratory that was late in getting the results back. Hibs, I think, took the chance of a 24-hour return, which didn't happen. The testing company wanted 48 hours. So, and Rangers, who were away in France the previous week, misunderstood and take them at face value the protocols. So those three clubs were written to, kind of acknowledged and understood the circumstances and said that they would comply from here on in.
Yeah, so again, Jason Leach was on the show Wednesday night, I think.
Tuesday, was it? I come in.
My apologies, you did Tuesday, where it was described as a line in the sand. Now, volleyball and golly, the Aberdeen 8, there is a certain element of that being retrospectively done, which it is, but this is not about trying to uncover every single misdemeanor that's taken place since March, is it?
No, and there is the line in the sand, but there is the material difference between breaches of government guidelines versus hiccups on the process. And I'd rather they happened before the season started, but making sure that all clubs were compliant and things like testing. That's why twice weekly testing came in as well, to make sure that those lags weren't an issue anymore.
Let's speak to Alec in Somerston and get his take on it. Hi, Alec.
Hi there, how you doing, panel?
Not bad, not bad at all.
Good stuff. Before I go on to my points here, you were talking about a couple of names for the Aberdeen 8 and volleyball and golly.
Keep it clean.
I would have called them. Aye, the Hateful 8. And Dolly Balling Golly.
Okay. I don't know if it would make it into a good old tabloid man like Hugh Keevans. I don't know if he'll pick that one up for the Sunday column, but you've got something to start with.
Well, you see, in my capacity as a grump, I would say it's not a laughing matter.
I thought you might.
What about the Soul Searchers?
No, I prefer the Searchers from Liverpool.
You're right, it is serious. It's serious business. We shouldn't make light of it. Alec, what do you make of everything that's going on then? The news today, you know, that Aberdeen and Celtic could be punished as a club, and the news that the players involved will face disciplinary action themselves.
Well, for a start, definitely. I think the players should be punished, definitely. But I don't think you can punish the clubs, especially in terms of points being deducted. Maybe a fine, but if you think about it, I mean, if you work in an industry where somebody else has done something wrong, you can't punish the whole workforce. It's that individual that gets punished.
The thing I've noticed about the points thing, right? I've noticed
no matter how many times
I've noticed a lot about it. I've not seen. What's interesting to me, and some people will say that's not interesting, you need to get out more and find out actually the things that are actually interesting. It is only really coming from fans who, of course, pundits, some pundits will go down that road as well, which is fine. But I mean, in terms of those within football and even the guys who are essentially victims of this. Jim Goodwin, he's had his schedule disrupted. St Mirren haven't been able to play certain games. Brian Rice, again, a victim of it, if you like, punished. They've done nothing wrong, and they've been punished, if you want to use that phrase, inadvertently punished. Yet these guys, the victims, are still coming out and saying, don't punish clubs. You can't be forfeiting games. You can't be given points. But we still have a huge groundswell of opinion amongst football supporters that that's a route to go down.
You know, Gordon, from personal experience, that people are sending photographs all over the shop saying, look, he plays for such and such, and there he is at a party, and on and on and on it goes. We've got a supporter version of the Stasi going on now. They will not be content until they finally get the goods on someone and force Nicola Sturgeon to bring Scottish football to a halt. They live in a fevered atmosphere, and all of a sudden football has been forgotten about. The consequences of the game closing down for a second time have been completely ignored. There is a desperation to get somebody, somewhere, anywhere into trouble.
All right, I'll bite on that though, just before we let Alec in. To be fair, you, as I'm sure you would admit, cannot speak on behalf of everyone, and you would respect their right to turn around and say, no, I don't want Scottish football to close down again, so I want a deterrent that's big enough to stop people breaching protocols going forward. You might believe that no one is coming at it with good intentions, but that's maybe a bit unfair.
Obviously, there are exceptions to every rule, but the supporter Stasi members right. are there to try to get a rival into trouble, get something to materially influence the league, and what they will succeed in doing is getting football stopped.
Alec.
Yep, I totally agree with you, 100%. Do you not think, though, that the vast majority, well, apart from a gentleman tonight who I was flummoxed, really, and a gentleman last night, an elderly gentleman, who said, we are Rangers fans, but we don't want Celtic or deducted any points. We want to win it on the park. But I think the vast majority calling for the points reduction is Rangers fans, and they're clutching at straws. They did it last year as well. I mean, in my opinion, there was no chance they were going to come back. Do you know what I mean? I mean, Celtic were light years ahead of them, and Rangers were internally imploding. So I think it's a bit of desperation from the Rangers fans. Now, don't get me wrong, I think on the field they're doing really well just now. So why go on about points deductions and everything else like that?
Gordon, this is going to be the way of it for this season, because there is so much at stake, and I think you might have coined the phrase the COVID cliping. But to take your initial point, the message cannot be clearer. Scottish football's got a yellow card. The last thing it needs is vigilantism. Oh. But surely, when 8 Aberdeen players and 1 Celtic player are brought before the Scottish FA, when the First Minister of Scotland says one more and it's a red card, when the National Clinical Director, who's got every other sector in the country to deal with, says, I need confidence. If that is not
deterrent enough
and a deterrent to football players,
yeah,
then nothing will be.
Again, that's, it's one of those things that, you know, we can't really prove it. Yes, maybe some Rangers fans are doing what Alex says, but maybe some aren't. And to be fair, I know loads of people who are not Rangers fans who think that clubs should have to forfeit the points and whatever. And I know you've already said, Darryl, that's just, it's just not a thing. It's just not going to happen. It's not there. It's not within the rules. I think where the leap is coming, and again, I'm not saying it's justifiable, what would you say to people who hold up the examples of your St Mirren and your Hamilton, and you're saying these guys aren't doing anything wrong, they are doing everything right, and they're being, in quotation marks, punished by not being able
football
to play their fixtures?
Football is a microcosm of the country. It's the few who spoil it for the many, for the same reason that pubs were opened and then pubs were given due notice that they had to adhere to test and protect measures, etc. Football is not immune to coronavirus. And as the country's creeping back towards that R number at one, football's already febrile in this country because of the 10 in a row potential. The last thing it needs is any more hysteria. But the reality is, to the fans who are either want to stop 10 in a row or looking to win 10 in a row for bragging rights, will take any advantage they can to try and get their club over the line.
If anyone would care to read the full transcript of Jim Goodwin's press interview in this morning's newspapers, he said that after the mauling, that's my word, not his, after the mauling that St Mirren got at Ibrox, the players weren't entirely unhappy to miss out on Celtic in their next game because they knew it would be an energy-sapping evening for them against Celtic. So they weren't entirely unhappy. That's not the mark of a man who feels that his club have been punished or victimised.
Yeah, having said that, that's that sort of one-off example, isn't it? Because of what followed next in St Mirren's fixture schedule. If we were, and I'm not saying we are, you would be looking to be bigger than that. You'd be looking to try and have a solution that fits everything.
But if the charge in isolation is St Mirren are the victims in this, not according to Jim Goodwin.
All right, thank you, Alec. In Somerson, that rounds us off tonight. What we are looking for, though, is still another three players who get capped by Scotland since 2008. Whilst at Dundee United, you've got Andy Robertson, Andy Webster, Paul Dixon, Gary Kenneth, Barry Robson, Craig Conway, and most recently Lawrence Shanklin. Three to get go. No. All right, I was expecting
no.
more.
No,
it's a no go.
Well, we've got 5 minutes.
We need the.
No, you've got.
We need clues. We need
2 seconds. Oh wow.
Okay.
Initials. Anything.
Went from Dundee United to Celtic with his pal.
Oh.
Oh come on.
Gary Mackay Stephen.
Yes. And what about his pal?
Stuart Armstrong.
Nah, he's not one. Sorry. Just Mackay Stephen. Right, striker. Scored. I'm sure he scored for Scotland against then world champion Spain and now plays in our lower leagues. Plays for Clyde.
Stephen Naismith.
Now plays for Clyde.
Oh, David Goodwillie.
Did he score against Spain? Someone might tell me I'm talking absolute rubbish. I seem to remember something against Spain. Right, midfielder. I think he's still currently playing at Forfar. This is the hardest one. I knew you'd forget about this guy.
Oh, holding or attacking midfield?
Oof, come on, yeah, more defensive probably.
Yeah. Oh.
The initials here, you like the initials, yeah, don't you? SR.
Quick. Stuart.
Scott.
Robertson.
Scott Robertson.
Scott Robertson. We kind of got there in the end. Thank you, Hugh and Darryl. We're back tomorrow, 2 o'clock. GBX Friday's up next.